Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is November 7th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, upcoming events, I'm headed across the country. I leave the San Francisco Bay Area on Friday. I'll be sending next week in Palm Springs with the folks from Going Organic magazine. You've probably started to notice more articles from them. On the blog, I'm going to be doing a quarterly article for them. They're having a series of events, many of them organized because they're working on an incubation and funding effort to back organic food entrepreneurs in their area. Wonderful group of people, and I'm looking forward. I'll double back on Wednesday, November 20th, to go over to LA to do Coast to Coast for an hour live with George Norrie. And then I'll turn back around and headed back to Tennessee. I'll hopefully stop to see Dr. Joseph Farrell, as I'll be going through the southern route and hopefully be back in Tennessee before Thanksgiving. I expect to stay pretty grounded in Tennessee for several months. There's, now's the time to be quiet and simple is my feeling. Our theme tonight is Breaking Through the Cloud Cover. I wrote a commentary by that title up on the blog. I was inspired by a newsletter I got from a Swiss money manager who I very much admire, and he commented that the problem in our society was all the symptoms of debasement of the currency, and I just couldn't put this down. This is a conversation I keep having with financial folks again and again and again, which is our financial problems a symptom of a problem, or are they the cause of the problem? And it's very interesting. In his commentary, the money manager castigated another money manager from disassociating from the real assets that produce value and build an economy, and yet he was doing the same thing. He was on the problem side of the equation, he was disassociating from the real problems and sort of, I feel, hiding behind finance. So this is a chicken and egg question we keep going around and around, and I keep going around with financial people because by and large, I find there are many excellent financial people who literally just do not want to look at these issues. They do not want to look at a world where the problems aren't inflation or deflation. The problems are we have a governance system that is running the financial system this way for a reason, and we need to look at who's governing, what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing, what the risks they're managing. It's a whole conversation, and it's exactly the one I had with Joseph Farrell. And that's why I find this whole series on the breakaway civilization to be so important. When I talk to financial people about this, I can't tell you, I've spent a lifetime getting whacked by very high-powered, very, I think, good people who don't want to look at this. One, they find it intellectually overwhelming. It's hard if you're a pond frog to suddenly go look at the ocean, is number one. So they find it intellectually overwhelming. Two, they find it emotionally overwhelming. It means looking at a whole series of issues that present risk, which can be mind-boggling if you haven't dealt with them before. It causes you to look at things that can be very sort of perverted and unpleasant. And it's also hard because it means that your entire framework that you've been operating on, this one guy said to me, really got very upset. He said, I feel like you're telling me that the sky is not the sky, it's the ceiling, and there's a sky overhead. It's sort of reminiscent of that scene in The Truman Show when he discovers that the end of the ocean is not the sky. It's a movie set, and he can get up and walk out of the door. And finally, it's not socially acceptable. You know, you have a whole world of very high-performance people in the financial markets who believe that they can do a much better job of proving results in a world where they have control. And clearly, if you're talking about things that the guys upstairs don't appreciate, it's going to get you whacked, and so you don't want to do it. The reality is many folks want to maintain good discipline, good habits, it's hard to do when it turns out reality is very different than you thought. You know, how do you keep it together when everything's falling apart? So there's a tremendous tension here, and it's one of the reasons I do the Solari Report, so I can have a forum where we can function in a world where we can look at reality but still manage to be effective in being productive and useful at very much at the day-to-day level of our lives. Anyway, but it's one of the reasons I value Dr. Farrell so much, because he's willing to have this discussion and have a wide-ranging discussion that covers all the unanswered questions on the asset side of the balance sheet. So if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to the Breakaway Civilization Part 1 and Part 2, and then the one we posted today, I strongly recommend them. Money and markets. Well, we're in the cycle we knew we'd come into. For years, we've seen the equivalent of my estimate, $40 trillion, literally being stolen, being shifted out, the financial coup d'etat. But however, it wasn't impacting people's day-to-day liquidity. Now money's getting cut. Now the budget is really cutting hard and fast. And it's not just cuts where you say, oh, well, it'll be better next year. We're just going through a down cycle. Now people are beginning to realize the extent of the financial coup d'etat and what it's going to mean to their pocketbooks. And so now that their budgets and liquidity are being affected, they're getting angry. They want to hold the government accountable. So we're watching. It reminds me of the description of the last days in the Bible. The spirit of offense, the speed at which people give or take offense, is rising rapidly. There's an article. So let's go through the stories with that in mind, because we're seeing this in many. This is a theme that threads throughout all the different stories, or many of the different stories on the blog. Our great article from Wired on internet neutrality and the dangers, the risks we have of losing it. What you're watching is a variety of interests, particularly the telecom companies trying to improve their market share and control vis-a-vis everybody else. And it's one of the perfect examples where a grab for turf shrinks the whole pie for everybody. And we're seeing that, and I suspect we're going to see more. Series of different articles continuing on global spying and the fact that we're living in a world where there's less and less privacy. That's related, of course, to big data collection. We're watching the BlackBerry folks continue to have difficulty continuing as a company. And I believe that was very much because they tried to create a private network, a very high-quality private network for business executives and the business crowd. And, of course, that's the flow of data and information that the intelligence agencies most want. So I think they have clearly held up as long as they can. In this latest go-around, their CEO being forced out, a new person put in. We also see more articles on the fact that social media information is being used to estimate your credit score, and so who you associate with on Facebook could literally change your credit score. Obamacare, the fury continues. Lots of frustration, because many people really did believe that they would be able to keep their insurance. They didn't understand the price of their insurance would double, or they could be dumped. Pressure from the administration on insurance companies to not drop people. Let's see how this all plays out. The reports I'm getting is it's a very ugly situation for many people. As the video that I posted a week ago from Carl Denninger that he did on USA Watchdog, it was a very good one on Obamacare, pointed out, Obamacare needed the young people to sign up. Latest headlines this week is young people are not signing up for Obamacare. We see an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning saying the Democratic senators are pressuring the administration. They're afraid that it's going to hurt them at the polls. No kidding. Yes, it's going to hurt them at the polls. It's very hard to come up with scenarios of how the administration is going to write this, and let alone write it quickly. So let's see how it plays out. Several more articles on the latest round of cutbacks in food stamps and the politics of food stamps. The dependency of a large percentage of the U.S. population on food stamps continues to grow, and I expect that, you know, until you have a major restructuring of the economy, which certainly doesn't look like anyone at the federal level is planning to engineer or support such a thing, until you have it, it's going to continue to grow. We see, as a result, this impact the election results in the different governor races. The most notable one is the re-election of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie getting more than 60% of the vote in a state which is traditionally Democrat when he's a Republican. I put up a little comment here on Christie on the blog, and I said as follows, that after two decades of pretzel talk, it's a relief to contemplate the possibility of a seasoned politician who likes people and understands what a septic tank is and why it is important. Anyway, so it's much too early to talk about primaries. There's a lot that can happen between now and 2016. So far, the Democrats are indicating that they want to commit suicide. Hillary Clinton apparently leads way ahead in the polls as the Democratic primary candidate. So the Democrats are basically positioning themselves to put up somebody who's deeply tied to all the policies that everybody's going to be so angry about. You wonder how that's going to work out. Anyway, so it's a long road between now and the national elections in 2016. And the fury that's going to have to be processed is enormous. And we'll get some inkling of that in the 2014 congressional elections. So keep an eye on it, because the politics of this thing are going to get very interesting. Fukushima continues to be the global wild card. We've been tracking the plans to move the fuel rods. This is a very dangerous strategy. If you don't move them and you get another earthquake or tsunami, then you've really got a very terrible situation. If they fail to move them successfully and you get a meltdown or explosion, then, you know, it's still going to be bad. So we continue to watch, and I appreciate all the different articles that folks have sent. Again, if you see anything that you think is a good coverage on Fukushima, we continue to want to get that on the blog and cover that carefully. The debate about fossil fuel continues. Another article about renewables cutting into the fossil fuel markets. It's and nuclear. It's up on the blog. We've had so many interesting pieces. We're having Jim Norman join us in December for an update on the oil card and what is happening in the energy markets, because it's very fluid and very interesting. Financial markets were on a tear this week until today. The stock market continued to reach new highs and then turned down sharply today. IPOs have been continuing, with the Twitter IPO getting priced and out today, successful despite the significant sell-offs in the market. If you watch the pattern of IPOs, it's very much along the lines of the crash-up scenario that I talked about in the crowdfunding report. I talked to Alistair Thompson, publisher of New Zealand Scoop Media, yesterday. He said they are also experiencing a tech bubble. Fair amount of money flowing into both equities and private equities. This is going to be a global phenomena. Today I put up on the blog a chart of Starbucks compared to coffee, just to give you a sense of the tremendous divergence in the market this year between commodities and corporate profits. Essentially what I'm saying is the deflation in commodities has been a real boon to corporate profits in the North American markets. The two are very much related. If you look at the third quarter, essentially all the earnings in the S&P really came from companies issuing debt at relatively low interest rates and using the money to do share buybacks. So it's basically no increase in earnings except from financial engineering. And that's because companies have enjoyed relatively low interest rates and low commodities prices. So if you're Starbucks, you don't pay anywhere near as much. You pay 40% less for coffee now than you did at the beginning of the year, and your interest rates continue low. And so always a big question mark in our minds: if interest rates and commodities start back up, what's it going to do to corporate profits? Precious metals are looking surprisingly weak given the time of year that we're in. There doesn't seem to be any sign of moving up. We'll have the precious metals market report next week and talk more about that. Fixed income, there's a very interesting article from a survey by Citibank of the family offices of wealthy family. It turns out rich families are hoarding cash. Very rich families are not, but rich families have 39% of their holdings in cash. What's interesting is if you contemplate that cash coming out and going into the equity markets, or globally, a relatively tiny percent of the population who buys equity globally shifting up, and literally the new middle class and the emerging markets starting to buy equities. Both of those two argue for support for the equity markets, but we'll see. Under the category of all things fashionable, more back and forth about trade agreements, a very good discussion by Bill Moyers on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I put up on the blog, and we continue to find that very interesting. With all this squabble about the spying scandals, the discussion of the EU and American trade negotiations is off the front headline. I'm sure it's continuing. More this and that on global warming, carbon taxes, and other kinds of sneaky taxes and control. Bitcoin continues to get pumped. And I had a commentary on Bitcoin a week ago. I don't have much else to say about it other than if you want to help Mr. Global prototype virtual currencies and put your more money in fiat currency, have at it. 3D printing continues to attract a lot of interest. A very interesting study from UBS on the future of 3D printing and its impact on the economy. That's up on the blog. Again, more stories on crowdfunding. We're in the SEC 90-day comment period. That will be over in January, and those regs should be promulgated in January. So we'll have another Salieri report on crowdfunding then. The Iran plan for limiting their nuclear power was, according to the Iranian nuclear negotiator, was approved by the six world powers. The six world powers, United States, Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, however, did not confirm. So we'll see where that comes out, but hopefully. And I couldn't believe it. Article says U.S. to ban trans fat in all U.S. foods. Could it be possible that the budget issues are causing the government to rethink food policies? Could that possibly be it? I don't know. We'll keep an eye on it. The Olympic torch has been delivered to the space station. So more proof positive that the powers that be are trying to get us to look upward. Our hero this week is Paul McCarthy. Story up in the blog. He printed a new prosthetic arm for his son on a 3D printer. Another one of the thousands possible examples. Very interesting. Ask Catherine. I'm going to take all the precious metals and currency questions that we got this week a lot. We'll move them to the precious metals market report with Franklin Sanders next week. Let me read a comment posted at the blog. Rode home next to a young Air Force helicopter pilot. He was on a three-month rotation deployment to Afghanistan from his permanent duty station in Japan. In our conversation, he told me how bad the condition of their birds were. By birds, he means helicopters. They are routinely loaded and run beyond spec, and finding spare parts due to the money crunch, it's like pulling teeth when you can find the teeth. The SIT frames are showing signs of stress fractures. Typically, the United States Air Force gets what it wants budget-wise. It's one of the major underpinnings of our super logistics mechanism that allows us to force project globally. Without this mechanism, the far-flung outposts of the U.S. Empire are in dire peril. The cracks are appearing at the edges. I wish them the best of luck. Soldiers don't make U.S. foreign policy, they just enforce it. Very interesting tidbit. That is a sign that there is enormous fraying at the edges of empire, and very dangerous. If you're looking at the United States Air Force and the United States Navy, they are, and the Army, this is what holds up the U.S. dollar. So if it's fraying that badly, not a good sign. Another question, would you consider doing a Soleri report on safe, enjoyable places that people can move to and live in around the world without needing a ton of money to live there? That's an interesting question. I've always stayed away from that because there are so many services that encourage people to believe that if they just leave the United States, all their problems are solved. And I don't want to fall into that trap of giving that impression. But I do think it would be good to do one on the pros and cons of moving abroad and then some of the different places that are recommended. There's an interesting article from the New York Times. It was New York Times or Wall Street Journal on a person from Tennessee who moved to Nicaragua just for the period when he was 60. He and his wife were 62 to 65 because they went off, I guess they retired and went off their health care at 62 and Medicare didn't kick in at 65. And Nicaragua, the sort of cash health care or the cash cost of health care was 20% of what it would be in the United States. And it was a very interesting example of the sort of pros and cons of moving to a much lower cost area. But thank you for that suggestion. And I will consider it. In terms of some of the new technologies that seem to be in the process of being released, I was wondering if you were aware of the companies involved in the development, specifically for 3D printing, robotics, and material science, graphene. Yes, that's one of the things I spend a fair amount of time as an investment advisor looking at, who's in the lead on these things and how they're doing it. There's a very good study by the UK Patent Office on graphene. You can pick it up on a search on the internet, and it has a listing of who has all the patents on graphene. It's quite interesting. In the environmental field, I also feel many of our problems can be solved by technology. Along these lines, I also want to share some possibilities. Would you take a look? So yes, absolutely. Thanks for that. I will take a look. One of the things this poster also points out is how, let me just go through it. About 10 years ago, a professor from the East Coast had written about four possible future scenarios, Star Trek, Mad Max, Big Government, and Ectopia, and surveyed individuals to vote on a scale of 1 to 10 on their preferences for each scenario. What I found fascinating on is that Star Trek was not voted very highly. Hopefully this will change. That may be changing. If you notice, there's an explosion of articles, Popular Mechanics, Popular Science, Wired Magazine, all throughout the popular press on space and space technology. And I suspect a lot of the new movies on space are designed to kind of turn that around. Anyway, thank you for a great comment, great feedback. Hello, Catherine and friends. Please ask Catherine to comment on the current military purge of top leaders. I understand over 200 officers have been terminated. I have sent that link and an inquiry to a variety of people who advise me about military issues. So I will respond as soon as I can dig it out and get an answer. One more question. In my opinion, the blacklisting of movie screenwriters in the 50s, accusing them of being communists, was probably the result of the powers that be letting the movie industry know that they could get to them and they'd better be very careful when choosing their subject matter. Then in 66, Jack Valenti, special assistant to President Lyndon Johnson, became the president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences for 38 years. This, to me, indicates alignment of the interests of powers that be along with the movie industry, and I wanted to know your opinion on this. Absolutely. The way to understand the alignment between the powers that be and the movie industry is to go back and study Joe Kennedy's sort of development of those connections before he ended up at the SEC. It's a very interesting story, and there's a fair amount that's been written on it. But I see Hollywood and Washington and Wall Street is very, very much linked. To this day, I don't believe any movie makes it out that the Pentagon hasn't let out. And there's some interesting questions about what that means in particular movies and situations. But I think movies are the way that a lot of conversations are permitted that aren't permitted in the actual media. And that's why I always say in America, fact is fiction and fiction is fact. So speaking of that, let's go to the movies with a review of Ender's Game. Ender's Game is a new film on a wonderful science fiction book by Orson Scott Card. It's one of my favorite science fiction books. It's the story of Earth in the future that has repelled two alien invasions and, to protect against a third, decides that the people most appropriate to lead the fleet will be children. And they're trained with video games, and the story centers around the young leader, Ender Wiggin, who is chosen essentially to act as admiral of the fleet. I won't tell you the rest in case you see the movie. It's one of a whole series of space invader genre that we've seen grow in number over the last couple of years, and I suspect one of the reasons is, of course, to significantly increase the interest in space, as I see that as being the place where there's going to be significant investment happening. Sort of what they said in Star Trek: Space, the Final Frontier. So, Ender's Game, if you like science fiction, if you like action, if you like Harrison Ford half as much as I do, I thought it was quite interesting and different than the book, but quite well done, I thought. Okay, and that leads to our interview. I had another amazing conversation with Dr. Joseph Farrell. It's posted up at the blog. It's the next sort of sequel to our discussion. We did the Breakaway Civilization Part 1 and then Breakaway Civilization Part 2. And here we really start to dig in and say, okay, now what are these guys up to today? And what does that have to do with what's going on with the dollar? What's going on with the economy? What's going on with all the sort of different things we're seeing around us? I'm trying to create a framework for the unanswered questions of who's really running things and, you know, what are the risks and issues that they're managing? I don't have the answers to the question, but Joseph Farrell is a scholar who's really dedicated himself to trying to understand these issues. And he has the ability to look at all the different areas of knowledge and expertise that you need to contemplate, because you're literally looking at the balance sheet of the entire planet when you look at these things and try and figure it out. So it's really an extraordinary interview. I won't say more about it. I'll leave it to you. We're really talking about his latest book, Covert Wars and the Clash of Civilizations, which I enjoyed tremendously. So I recommend it to you, and I recommend that interview. Okay, that's it for this evening. Coming up next week, Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. I will take all the questions we got this week on precious metals and U.S. dollar currency and send them to him, and we'll discuss them next week. Make sure to get your questions in. The sooner the better. November 21st, the following week, a very special interview. We'll be talking about the presidency and assassination of John F. Kennedy on the 50th anniversary, minus one day of his death, with author Peter Janney. He's the author of Mary's Mosaic. I wrote a book review of that book in June 2012. It's up on the blog. It's an extraordinary book. I called it a masterpiece. He tells the story of how he concluded his father, who was an official, a high-level official at the CIA, was involved in the assassination. And it's a touching story of both one of arguably the most important events in the history of America and of the world, and also a very intimate story of coming clean. And then John, November 28th for Thanksgiving, we'll be posting John Rappaport's latest. He's going to be talking about imagination and how it creates reality. So until next week, November 14th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.